What you are about to hear is not.
Not
a podcast. This is a global conversation recorded live in real time with real people.
Journalists,
business leaders,
academics, politicians. I think the term's a deep state.
Oh dear.
Investors,
experts, diplomats,
citizens.
Coming together from around the world to share their views and ask our guests the questions. If you would like to join this conversation or hear our incredible library of past conversations, please visit our website, pm101.club, and join the fastest growing conscious community on the free internet. Thanks for being here.
Enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Politics and Media 101. I'm Jeff Browning, and if you listened to our first few episodes, then you know that over the last few months, my friend Justin Higgins and I and our friends have convened hundreds of conversations, sometimes more than once per day, with more than 250,000 live listeners and participants, where we all hear live and direct from people in the news, in their own voices, in their own words, in long form, and where anyone who wants to can join to ask them a question, share their thoughts, or just listen. We're just now starting to release recorded portions of our live conversations for the first time, and we're grateful to you for joining us. Today, we're very excited to release part of a conversation, interview, and audience Q&A we had with Hallie Jackson. For all of 2015 and 2016, she lived on the road traveling with political campaigns and covering national news stories in real time. Now, she's the senior Washington correspondent for NBC News, where she and her team play a key role in deciding what goes on TV and why. This week, Hallie has a brand new streaming show launching on NBC News Now, which airs each day at 5 p.m. Millions of people see Hallie on their TVs every day, but with her new show, she's trying to create something distinctly different. In her words, she wants to strip away the formality of a traditional newscast and do something that feels more like human beings talking to other human beings. This is exactly what we've always tried to do on Politics and Media 101, so we really enjoyed having her on. And whether you're a diehard Hallie Jackson fan or if you're hearing from her here for the first time, we hope you'll enjoy it as much as we did. We talked with her about some issues that are in the news right now, but also we pulled back the curtain and asked about her life, what she thinks about very real criticism that people level against the media landscape today, where we are as a country, what her personal goals are as a journalist, and more. As always, if you like or dislike what you hear, if you want to find out how to join us live almost every day of the week, maybe ask one of our upcoming guests a question, or hear past episodes, please visit our website, pm101.live or pm101.club. They both work and will get you to the same place where you can find all that and more. Without any further ado, let's roll the tape.
Can you tell us a value or a lesson from your upbringing that you may not have shared with the news media and in public that has impacted and shapes the way you approach and deliver?
That is such an interesting question, and I've never been asked that before. And so, I mean, shout out to you for that. Because I'm very close. I was very lucky. I was raised in, actually, a swingy swing county, which is Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which politics nerds will know is always a very interesting spot to go back to when it gets close to elections. And I, in fact, did that. We've done our show from the road at Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania, which is about 10 minutes from where I grew up, because it is such an interesting sort of political sphere. I did not come from a political family, meaning we did not talk politics around the dinner table, right? Like, I wasn't one of these kids who came home and whose parents wanted to discuss news of day or current events in that regard. So it was never something that we talked about sort of overtly, but I think my parents always sort of raised me to ask, I mean, this sounds so cheesy, but like to ask questions and to be like a curious person. And in fact, I was on my high school speech and debate team, actually with somebody else who politics viewers may know and love, and that's Bob Costa from the Washington Post. He and I were on our high school forensics team together. And I say this because I always say I did the speech portion and the debate portion. And it was always interesting because I felt like I could see things from a lot of different sides. And I think that's actually been something that has been helpful, obviously, as a journalist. My parents would always, this was like, libraries are still popular, but we lived across the street from a library back then and had a library card and would spend a lot of time there. And they were just like, just go to the library. This is, I'm very old. I'm an ancient human. And this was pre like internet days. So I'd go to the library and like research stuff. And I loved like the Dewey Decimal System. I'm a huge, huge nerd. And I was very into all those kinds of things. And so my parents really sort of instilled that and encouraged that. And I think that sort of research basis has helped me as a journalist. I went to a school for higher education. I went to college at a research university that was heavily focused on research, more so than other sort of methods of education. And I think that all provided a good basis for what I do now, which is journalism. I did not go to school for it. I wasn't like, quote unquote, classically trained or anything. So I hope I think that's what I would say. It's a great question. I have to say, I'm going to ask like my mom about that later because it's a good one.
Awesome. And I just have to ask, you're basically telling us you were nerding out the whole time. What other passions did you have as a kid? I played baseball and never thought I was going to get into politics, but I loved hitting, you know, home runs and doubles. What did you love doing that's not nerding out or academic or...
This is going to be a highly disappointing answer for you because my sister got married right before the pandemic. It was like the winter right before the pandemic started a couple of years ago. And we're all together and telling stories about Lauren growing up and what she was like and all these great tales of how she played lacrosse and she would go out with her friends and funny stories of getting into, you know, mischievous trouble in high school. And I was like, oh man, I was like, Dad, what's a cool story about me from when I was little? Like, what was I like? What did I like to do when I was really young? He was like, I don't know. You read a lot. Like, that's literally what I did. That's my parents' defining hobby of me when I was a kid was like the fact that I always had my nose in a book. So I read a lot of books. I would read at the dinner table all the time, and my mom still laughs about it. She's like, I think it's good that I let you do that. She was like, but it really stifled the dinner table conversation. I tried to have other interests as well besides the nerd stuff, but it was a lot of that, the high school speech and debate thing. I played on a lacrosse team. We started our lacrosse team in public school. We didn't have one. And for some reason, it was a sport that I was kind of interested in. And a few women and I got together in high school and petitioned our school board, you know, to fund us. And so we got funded. We sort of created this team. We were the guinea pigs for it. And I will tell you that we were about 0-400, you know, in high school. And the sad part is that I was the goalie. So I would get like 100 shots a game. I mean, we were getting so crushed, just beyond crushed every single game. Like, I don't know what I was doing, but it was fun. Like, it was a cool thing to do. Flash forward to college, one of my current best friends, we met at this event and we were sort of exchanging where you're from, whatever. Turns out she's from across the river in New Jersey. And she's like, wait, you went to Pensbury? She's like, we played lacrosse against you. And I was like, oh, really? I was like, I was the goalie. Turns out she was a defender and the only goal she ever scored in her career was against me. Like, that's just how terrible we were, like, just from a, you know, a legendary perspective. But anyways, that was another way that I filled my time. So again, I hate to disappoint you, but I was definitely did not have like super cool extracurricular activities. And now I'm a politics journalist. So like, hey, the hits just keep on coming.
No, the politics journalist is cool, but the reading is rather womp, womp, womp.
I know. I'm sorry. You're like, can we cut this off now? This conversation is over. Let's move on. It's all right. No, whatever you want, man.
This is awesome. We're going to start to get into some more nerdy questions here so I can now nerd out with you. So the media obviously has a limited time, resources, and space to report the news. And what makes the front page or TV broadcast has a huge impact on what Americans think is important. You are both a hard news journalist and also a TV anchor, and then you appear as a hard news journalist on TV programs. When you're in the meetings to decide what to include in the news, specifically your roles in television, how do you figure out what stories to give your limited airtime and to communicate?
Sure. It's kind of the classic discussion, whether it's a nightly network broadcast, right? A la nightly news that has 22 minutes in the network space, whether you're an MSNBC show like mine that has an hour of the cable space, whether you're on streaming, as I soon will be, I'm starting very soon, and figuring out what do you put in that time slot. Those are editorial decisions that you have to make. We do it as a team. And I think the show vision and the show, you know, brand, I hate to use that word, but that's what it is, matters in the sense of this, right? Let me give you an example in like my life. So I have, obviously, 3 o'clock Eastern on MSNBC. We're a politics show. I'm the senior Washington correspondent. I've been covering the White House for many years. I cover all sorts of things around Washington now. Like, I'm a politics reporter. We are a politics show. We lean into the politics news of day. So if there is a toss-up, right, and let me give you a sort of current example from this week. We've had a lot of news as it relates to President Biden's agenda and things happening on Capitol Hill. We've also had a lot of news related to, for example, the horrific incident that happened at Astroworld in Houston, right? Two big news stories that matter to a lot of people. Our show would lean into, would start our show with what was happening in the world of politics, right? Because that's our show. That's what our viewers come to expect. That's kind of the brand we are. We also cover, obviously, what happened in Houston, but I think a different show, for example, a more general news show. So the streaming show that I'm doing on NBC News Now, where I'm taking off my politics hat and putting on like a general assignment reporter hat, we would maybe lead with that Houston story instead. I hope that makes sense, but it really is thinking about what are you promising to your viewers and how do you deliver on that promise? So we promise at 3 o'clock, like our, and we talk about this every day on our team. It's in our mission statement that goes out at the top of our emails every single day, at the top of our rundowns. Our promise to our viewers is we're going to bring you news that's happening, that's breaking and that's developing, right? So for example, we had a slew of January 6th subpoenas that came out from the January 6th select committee investigating what happened at the Capitol riot. And a number of former Trump aides and allies were subpoenaed over the course of a couple days. Both of those days, the subpoenas happened to come right in the 3 o'clock hour. We're not waiting to get to that news. We're not doing 1 minute on that news and then moving on. That's breaking news that's happening our hour. We're going to cover that, and it's political, and our viewers have come to expect, and we have promised our viewers that we'll bring them stuff like that when that happens, right? I used to be at the 10 o'clock time slot. We would get Supreme Court cases coming in, decisions, you know, in June when the court would be deciding cases. Our commitment was we're not going to like not tell you that. Like, we're going to bring you that news as it's happening. We're very urgent. We're very breaking. We're very political. That's what 3 o'clock is. You're going to get other stuff, right? You can't count on breaking news every day. So you build out a show based on that sort of framework. But we really are trying to think about what are we committing to for our audience? And then how do we deliver on that promise, right? Because, you know, people, I think, expect something when they turn on the TV at 3 p.m. And we want to make sure that we're giving them that. There are viewers for example, the streaming side of things expect something very different, right? Like they're not politics junkies necessarily, right? They're very into the news, but they want to know all about all kinds of news and not just political news. So there's just a different lens that we're looking at from that front. So it's not, those meetings take a while, right? We're thinking about those rundowns every day. We're changing our rundowns all the time. We're looking at what's happening and what's developing and how we can kind of best serve our audience in that way. And then the other piece of it is booking, right? We're trying to get interesting lawmakers, you know, big name guests to come on and be able to talk with us. Or people who have stories to tell. I had Trevor Reed's family, his father, on recently to talk about the hunger strike that he's on as he's now being held in this Russian prison, despite the U.S. ambassador to Russia calling it, you know, a sham trial, essentially, the charges against him preposterous. We have, you know, we want to bring those voices on, right? The sort of first person accounts that I think add a lot of texture to the news that we're putting on.
So I'm not going to name any names, but it sometimes seems that, especially in cable news, there's more time devoted to the crazy tweets of the backbench congressman, maybe making threats to other members of Congress or the president, than the substance of legislation that will materially affect Americans' lives. So how do you go about, you said you're a politics show, the 3 p.m. hour. Those are both political issues.
Totally.
And you have two audiences. Like, I was trying to create that dichotomy, the CRS report and then the Trump tweet or whatever. How do you go about deciding which issue you're going to give more coverage?
So I would turn it back around and point to you, which is that you are somebody who is acknowledging, like, you would want to hear both of those stories, right? Like, am I right in that? Like, you sort of would have an appetite for hearing both the policy wonk story and the sort of what you might call like sort of talkery story that's happening as well. And I think that like we contain multitudes, right? And the policy piece of it is super important to us. Like, we actually, as this Build Back Better agenda, the big sort of climate and social spending bill, as you know, reconciliation along with the bipartisan infrastructure bill has been making its way through Congress. One thing that we've been hyper-focused on at 3 is we talk a lot about the polls, right? Like, so numbers show, like, people don't know what's in the bill. Well, that's because we haven't explained it to them, right? Like, because I think some of the White House aides would talk to, you know, would talk to us and talk to others and say, like, people like the pieces of the bill, they just don't know what's in it. Like, that's incumbent, you know, the media needs to talk about the actual policies that are in this bill. And we made a point every time we talked about that bill, we had these graphics we would put up to show, like, let's remind, like, here's what's in it, right? Like, here's current, and listen, it changed 40 times, as you know, like, here's what's in, here's what's out. We were trying to keep up with that. And we actually pulled in one of our correspondents, Sahil Kapoor, who is a fabulous congressional correspondent for us, to do what we sort of called, like, the politics deep dive, or like the policy. Honestly, we called it like nerding out with Sahil internally. We didn't call it that like externally, but that was how we thought of it, where he would go really deep on a certain provision, right? And the cool thing about that was we basically had him and took a fabulous correspondent and said, like, can you just like get really deep on this? And it was awesome. And I don't want to speak for him, but I think he appreciated it and we appreciated it because, listen, I know what it's like when you're working sources, and it's so much better to go to sources and say, hey, I'm doing a policy hit on cable. Like, can you tell me where you are on X? Than it is to be like, hey, like, did you see these numbers, these poll numbers or whatever, right? Like, I think, you know, from having worked on that side of things, like, don't people want to talk about that? Of course they do. It's like better, it's enjoyable as a reporter to be able to go to sources and say, I'm going to put this on TV. Let's talk about it. You get great information. And sure enough, like in these segments from Sahil, we're getting like very deeply reported pieces of information that like we wouldn't necessarily have had otherwise, right? So like there's that. It's also an hour show, right? So if there is some, as you say, crazy tweet from some backbencher making a threat, if it rises to what we think is the bar of worthy of coverage, meaning does it have broader repercussions? Is it like, you know, students in the back of class throwing spitballs because they can, or is there some broader implication? Those are things we're constantly talking about and assessing. I will tell you this, that when it comes to coverage of, for example, this has come up a lot lately as it relates to conspiracy theorists and like the QAnon movement, right? We've got an incredible team in Brandi Zadrozny and Ben Collins who are like on this beat for us. And we have a lot of conversations of like, should this be something we give oxygen to today? Like, where is that bar? And we just lean on the side of transparency, meaning we say on air, like very candidly with viewers. I remember I had this conversation with Garrett Hake on the air, like maybe a month or two ago, where it's like, listen, we really decided, like, we really talked about this internally in our meetings. Is this worth talking about? Is it not? Like, we need to have that conversation. And I think we need to be transparent about it, right? I think there's like, there's not some magic secret thing that's happening behind like a dark curtain that we're like all doing, like, you know, meaning the shows or the media writ large. There is no such thing as that. Like, I'm not talking with other shows about what they're doing or other networks or whatever. Like, we're sort of deciding, and we want to be transparent with viewers about how those decisions are made.
Fantastic. Folks, Politics and Media 101 with NBC News' Hallie Jackson. As she just referenced, she's launching a new show Monday, Hallie Jackson Now, premiering November 15th on NBC News Now. You can get it on Peacock or YouTube TV, like I'm going to go watch it on. Hallie, it's at 5 p.m., is that right?
It is, and I'm holding you to that commitment. I'm excited for your viewership, so thank you.
You've received one new viewer from this, so that is great. Hopefully many more from 1,000 people here. So I want to get into your new show. Critics, sure. And take this however you want, right? Critics have pointed to various shortcomings of our media ecosystem, and I've looked at your format, and it seems pretty darn cool. What sorts of shortcomings does your show seek to address? And
you mean on the streaming side, the new show?
Yes, the new show.
Because I will say, we're seeking to improve upon all those things on the MS cable side all the time anyway, right? Like, I don't know. I don't accept that the ecosystem is effed up and there's nothing we can do about it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we want to do good television and smart television every day. And so that's something that we think about. So I just want to say that piece of it. On the streaming side, you know, the interesting thing about that show, Justin, is like, it is truly, truly me taking off the senior Washington correspondent hat, which I have not done in my time at NBC. I've always kind of, except for the very first like year I was with NBC, I've always done politics for them. That's my background. That's what I went to school for. It's my interest. So I've just taken to that, I think, a little bit more, and have grown in that role here at NBC. This is an opportunity when they came to me this summer and asked me to launch this show as part of our primetime programming block on NBC News Now. So this at 5 o'clock Eastern, Tom Yamas' show at 7 o'clock, Josh Johnson's show at 8 o'clock. They say, hey, this is going to be, we want to focus on things other than politics. Like, we kind of want you to widen the aperture a little bit, if you will, and incorporate other things. So what's interesting is I think there is, critique, I think the critique you're referencing, and jump in and tell me if I'm wrong in reading you on this or like reading between the lines of you on this. I think that the critique you're referencing on the media ecosystem is a lot of the political media ecosystem. And that's not to say that sort of the mainstream news outlets don't have those same critiques. Of course they do. But I think in this show, we really are doing so much more beyond politics. It's a lot of the news of the day. It's national news, you know, international news, which is really important. And I think horribly undercovered, right, in many sort of domestic news sites. But that is something that we are committed to on the show. It's cultural news. It's, you know, when there's appropriate sports news, right? Aaron Rodgers is a story that is sort of transcending right now the sports world and has a leg like kind of in the politics world, in the health world, et cetera. It's all those kinds of things. And so, I mean, I don't know. Let me give you an example. Like we've been running through tech rehearsals as we're getting ready to launch this new show, which means we're doing like actual real shows. You can't watch them anywhere, but like we're doing them just to make sure we can. Again, we're literally creating this from the ground up. And there was this story out of New Jersey recently that we had one of our correspondents on about this missing 14-year-old teenage girl, a young girl of color who has not gotten nearly as much attention after having gone missing as, for example, as people who are close to her family have pointed out, other women who have recently gone missing and went viral on social media. And like, we should cover the story, you know what I mean? And so we did. We sent her down there. She talked to family. She was there. And we aired that, you know, quote unquote, aired that story. It's also going to air on other platforms and NBC News now that do. But those are the kinds of choices that we're trying to make. Because, you know, I think we are conscious of our role in that sort of bigger media sphere, if you will.
No, and you do a great job at 3 p.m. You, I think, and John Dickerson were the first two anchors that we reached out to because we love your coverage and the way that you approach it. So some of the critique.
I appreciate that. Thank you. That's great company. John Dickerson is a legend, man. He's really, really talented.
You're a legend. So this is cool. Justin Higgins.
With my shrimp picture and my lobster charcuterie. That's not legendary, Justin. Come on.
I'm a kid in the candy shop, Hallie. This is awesome. specifically about your show, I'm thinking like you said, political news is just political news. And it's like 2 to 5 minute segments. It's cookie cutter. You move on. Bullet points, move on. But your show has a different type of process to it. And it sounds like you're trying to basically give us the state of the republic, whatever that means, the ethos, the social norms, what we can see from culture, arts. How do you try and go about not only changing the type of news that you're going to give us, but also the format? Is it just going to be that 2 to 5 minute cookie cutter? Maybe sometimes hyperbolic stuff, or is it going to be a different feel and a different approach?
Leading question, counselor, but no. So hopefully no, not the cookie cutter approach, right? Or hyperbolic approach. I think what we're trying to do on the new show on the streaming side, and I would say we do this a little bit. MS is a different beast, right? Because on cable, like I said, you're booking guests, you're booking for us. We have a very pretty high bar for guests, meaning you don't, if you watch us at 3, like you don't see a lot of, you know, chit chat with pundits on both sides of the aisle. That's just like not something we tend to do a lot of. We'd rather pack in our super brilliant reporters and my friends and colleagues around the network to get them to talk about what they're seeing from their political perch, covering these things. On the News Now side, it's even more of that, meaning the bar for guests for us is really high, right? Like we're not going to have, again, it's not a politics show. And so we're really thinking about how do we harness the, and I hate to sound like a corporate like parrot here, but I believe in this mission and I've drank the Kool-Aid. So like, here it is, which is harnessing the power of the really good journalism that we do across all of our platforms at NBC News. How do we show that on streaming? Like, how do we let that loose on the streaming side of things? And for me, one of the things that was really important about this new show is trying to make it, I've said, it's the news for people who like news, right? It's the news for people who are into the news and who want to know more about like how we get there. Actually, I think you would probably really like it, Justin, with your, you know, in the sort of nerdy space that we've been talking about here. And the idea is like the conversation you and I are having right now, making that feel like what we're doing on the air, right? Like meaning taking away some of what I think can be something that creeps into maybe more traditional newscasts, which is okay, which is a bit of a formality. Like we're trying to really strip that out and make it feel honestly like as authentic as possible. Like I keep telling our team as we're going through these rehearsals, like let's just talk like normal people. you know what I mean? Like there's this thing, if you watch a lot of news, like there's a sort of way that like news anchors speak that's not always like supernatural, at least not for me. And so like, how can we just like be normal human beings here and like tell people really smart stuff about things that are happening in the world that affects their lives and what it means and why it matters, right? Like it's a little, that's our mission. It just is. And so to your point about the actual format, if you want to get into X's and you know, whatever, into all the nitty gritty of it, thank you. You know, I knew it was that. I just wanted to see it. My producer thought was, we're trying to really, and we've talked to all, and again, like I know all these correspondents and these journalists who are out there because they're my pals, like, right? Like I'm texting Gabe Gutierrez about whatever he's doing, you know, the scene that he's at out in Kenosha or whatever, like bringing the energy. Like if I ran into him on a scene, what is that conversation like? And let's have that conversation on the air, right? Instead of that formal, like toss line, 3 minute hit, toss back to the anchor, move on to the next show, like, or the next hit. Like we're trying to break that mold a little bit and give people some space to like try something a little bit different. So like I said to Pete Williams the other day, Pete, like what's something you haven't said on the air about this story yet? Right? Like what's the interesting thing that like you think is interesting, but like you haven't been prompted to say on network television? Like, tell me. And he did. Like, and it was very cool. And it was very interesting. And it was a point that I would never have thought to ask him. But Pete is brilliant. And he should be the one telling me about this Supreme Court thing because he's Mr. Supreme Court, right? Like, I don't need to be crafting a question to Pete on that. He's the expert. So, you know, we have this segment called The Backstory, where it's literally just, how did this story come together, right? A really interesting piece. Antonia Hilton has been doing incredible work with our colleague Mike Hixenbaugh. Do you know the Southlake podcast? Hugely successful.
I will have
She's been... It's really, I mean, it's just a fascinating look at like the issue, all sorts of issues related to critical race theory, education in this country. She's been doing very deep reporting on this, her and Mike, for months. And so we brought her on to, you know, she had this exclusive interview this week with a high school principal who got fired essentially for allegedly promoting critical race theory, which even the school board eventually acknowledged he never did. And it didn't actually wasn't a part of the school district's curriculum. You know, she has this exclusive interview with him, and we brought her on to talk about like, how'd you get that? How are you getting people to talk to you? What got you onto the story in the first place? It's the backstory of how these pieces are coming together. That's not the whole show, but like, it's a segment in the show that I think adds, again, some texture and something a little bit different, right, to the experience. Like we want it to be a show. I'm like, man, if I can get my friends in the news business to want to watch this show, like that'll be cool, because that would mean that you as like audience members who are not in the news industry are getting to see like what it's like for us and, you know, the way that we're trying to communicate in a pretty authentic way. Does that make sense?
Yes. So is it like Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom?
Can I make a confession? I don't know if I've ever watched an episode of that show, which makes me like probably a horrible news person. But if it's about talking fast, then yes, because I tend to do that.
There you go. No, it's not that good. Don't hold me to that, though, folks. you're not missing out. But now I need to pick out.
Well, when you try to book Aaron Sorkin on this podcast, Justin, you're going to have a hell of a time after saying that. So.
We will edit. No, we don't do that. We have some editorial control here in Independence. So now I want you to take off the streaming hat, take off the anchor hat, put on your Washington, D.C. correspondence hat. We've talked a lot about the news, but now let's get into the policy. Recently, President Biden and the Democrats just got a massive win with BIF, and that could have been impacted by the 21 election and you know, what many are seeing as a debacle on their side. Maybe it wasn't, but the Build Back Better looks like now that it's been decoupled from the bipartisan infrastructure deal for folks, like it's going to be a much more uphill battle. There could be certain electoral considerations going into 2022, deciding whether or not this passes. Can you kind of give us your in-depth take on where it kind of stands, maybe the mood of the caucus, and whether this thing is just going to continue to get stalled out or if it has a chance?
So a couple of things, and I would say this, I used to say this too. We had an anchor who would ask questions that were like crystal ball questions. And I would always say like, hey man, like I'm a reporter, right? I don't have a crystal ball. So, but I would say, and so I say that to say like, you know, I think one thing is as I wear, no matter what hat I'm wearing, it's always like a journalist hat, meaning, you know, I tend to let pundits do predictions, right? And I just kind of stick to what do I know? What is the reporting? So here's what I would say to you on that front, which is a couple of things. Number one.
Do you want me to reframe it? I can reframe it.
No, not at all. I honestly, just the idea of like, is it going to pass? Like, I don't know that, you know what I mean? Like, it looks like it's going to pass, right? But like, also, we don't know what's going to happen in a week when Congress gets back from recess, right? Like, and how that's going to shake out, which I think is okay to like to say. I think the other piece of this, what I think is interesting, are two things. One is something that you and I talked about just a couple minutes ago, which is this idea, sort of obliquely, which is this idea of people needing to know. I think you said, Justin, like, some of these policies affect deeply, like, the actual lives of so many millions of people in this country, right? That is something that the White House is thinking about and that they are looking to sell hard to the American public to make sure that they are getting support for the actual pieces of the Biden agenda that are in this climate and social spending bill, right? Things that they argue, obviously, President Biden ran on, they say he won on, you know, should be delivering to the American people. And so you're seeing him, and you're going to be seeing him, like, getting out and trying to make this sales pitch hard along with members of his cabinet. And it's interesting because it's something that, you know, I think that then Vice President Biden learned as a lesson as he watched the Affordable Care Act, you know, work its way through passage, and then the way that sort of the aftermath of that unfolds. And I think he's looking to make sure to get out there and to really sell hard to people what is in this and how it's going to make their lives better from like a very tangible way, right? Like a very concrete way. The question on the caucus is an interesting one because I don't know that the distrust piece has been solved for at this point, right? I had Pramila Jayapal on my show, the congresswoman who is the chair of the House Progressive Caucus, who has been critical in sort of these negotiations, you know, in the days before this was happening. I've had other members of the Progressive and Moderate Caucus on the show. And, you know, there are trust issues. There just are within the Democratic Party. President Biden, I think, is working to be a mediator on that front and has had some, as you've seen from obviously the passage of the bipartisan infrastructure bill, has had some success on that front. I don't know that that has solved for like the deeper underlying trust issues that are there, right? And so I think that is something that Democrats are going to have to deal with moving forward. I think we're going to see a lot of that in those weeks, like around Thanksgiving, around December, you know, beginning of December, middle of December, as this starts to get worked out. There is an incentive. I know that there are Democrats who want to get this done quickly. They want to see this move forward at a pretty quick clip. All of those things are to say, like, I don't know that any of it gets to what that root issue is right now, of like the trust factor here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does make perfect sense. So we are going to go to our audience questions.
Oh, great.
So this is cool. Everybody's from different political stripes and backgrounds, but they're always respectful. So we're going to start with Shanette, and then we'll go to Aram.
Thanks, Justin. And Hallie, thank you so much for doing this. I'm really enjoying this conversation. And I'm
so glad. This is my first Clubhouse, Shanette. I've never
You're
done
doing
Clubhouse
great.
Before. And I'm
You're
so
doing great.
Excited, so thank you. You're very kind to say so. Thank you.
So
check
question,
the mail.
Yeah, no problem. My question for you is about sort of the progress of your role on TV news. So you transitioned from, you know, being a road warrior during campaigns. I mean, I know you, Justin mentioned you started, I don't need to tell you your career, actually. I don't know your full career. But from what I've witnessed more recently, you know, being a road warrior and on the campaign trail and then guest anchoring, then to having your own show and now multiple shows, like, what was that like? And, you know, how did you navigate that so successfully? I mean, because I think you do an amazing job, but it seems overwhelming to sort of jump from one thing to the next. So I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. First of all, I'm so appreciative of your kind words. And I like very much mean that, Jeanette. Thank you. It's like nice to hear. And I just think I really appreciate that. And so as far as sort of the transition, listen, it's not easy, right? Like meaning I should say this, first of all, it's been the greatest adventure of a lifetime. I've had the most fun. I still can't believe that like 6 years ago, I was like on the campaign trail, just like doing stuff. Like it's so cool. It's such a privilege. I pinch myself every day. I feel very lucky and very fortunate. Right. I think I'm thrilled having been able to cover kind of this really important time in history. It's also like very humbling, right? Like this is the last 4 years of the Trump administration. So I was a chief White House correspondent after I was a road warrior, which Shanette has mentioned, just for folks who don't know, I was on the road for like all 2015 and 2016. And I mean, literally on the road all the time. I think I spent maybe 2 weeks at home, like ever in that time period. Basically moved to New York temporarily for like 3 months during the transition from the prior administration into the Trump administration, moved to DC, chief White House correspondent, did that for 4 years. And then this past inauguration, but in January of this past year, was promoted to senior Washington correspondent, doing kind of like bigger picture stuff, not on that sort of White House day-to-day beat, but doing sort of longer lead stories, sort of getting to be a little more creative, which has been really fun. And then now have added this other show in addition to the MSNBC show. So the progression has been, I've been very fortunate. I felt very lucky. I will say this, a thing that I have learned over the last like 6 or 7 years, however long it's been now, is that, you know, boundaries are really important. And I say this to say, like, I think this is something we probably, a lot of us learned during the pandemic, as we sort of tried to set boundaries around home and work, and you sort of are faced with these questions of like, what's truly important. I also had a baby in this time, became a mom. And I will say, like, there were some moments of like really tough mental health struggles for me. Like before I got pregnant, you know, I had a couple of really sort of dark periods. I'm pretty open now about like my work with my therapist and the things that I'm doing, because I think like I felt so much shame around that for a long time. Like I couldn't talk about it, right? Because like I also am like a high, I'm like a type A person. I'm like, you know, I like to perform at a high level, right? Meaning I don't mean perform like as an act, but I mean like I like to work. I like to do things well and like do them. And like, I don't know. So it's been, there have been some tough moments. There've been some really tough moments that I really haven't felt comfortable talking about for like a long time. One of the things, not to like bring this back to the streaming thing, but we are doing this piece that's going to air for launch week, where I share a little bit more about this in the context of burnout. We talked with doctors and nurses that have been having like a ton of, you know, obviously major, major pandemic anxiety and stress, and how do you cope? And we went to this, what I ended up calling burnout camp, that some of them went to, and learning these like really intense sessions where you work through, like just work through some stuff, you know, and you really get into it with these people. And it was just this really incredible experience where I was sort of wearing the journalist hat, right? But also there wearing my like personal hat a little bit. Again, working through some of my own stuff too. So anyways, all that is to say, like, it's a great question. It's been an incredible journey. I owe so much of it to like, truly to NBC, who has supported me through like every step of the way, who's put me in a position to succeed, who's given me resources when I've asked. When I've asked for help, they've, you know, just to do the work, they've stepped up on that front. So I love working here. I'm really proud to work here. I'm really proud of the work that we do. And I'm glad you have been on this ride. I also have learned the real value of like needing to take care of yourself sometimes and like put some of those boundaries in place and to, you know, to understand how, like, I think I want like a sustainable career that lasts for like a long time now down the road, right? And to do that, I have to like think about those boundaries and think about how do I take care of myself. I don't mean like face masks and bubble baths, do you know what I mean? But like, how do I take care of myself from like a really root level? I don't know. Was that too much, Jeanette? Was that like way more deep than you wanted? I don't
know. No, that was awesome, actually.
Clubhouse, man. Yeah. We're like doing it. We're just going to unzip our skin and just get vulnerable, you know?
Totally. You're really good at this Clubhouse thing. You have a career ahead of you, I'm
sure. You're very kind. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette. We will go to Aram, and then we will check out what Erica has to say.
Hey, thanks for being Hallie, and you know, congrats to the PM 101 crew for another great guest. Watched you many times and glad that you're here. And I have a question. You know, you and me were just talking about the stresses and strains of just balancing life and work and all that stuff, which is, you know, part of, you know, I think a lot of people's lives, but you totally. In particular have to not only exist within a bubble, but see beyond it to be able to do your job well. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I find really frustrating about a lot of the reporting that I see out there are the ability for sort of false truths to be widely adopted. And mm-hmm. I'm not talking about sort of the normal sort of mis and disinformation stuff that we talk about a lot these days, but things like the suburbs being white, when mm-hmm. that just isn't really true in our country anymore, or, you know, some of the things that you end up hearing repeated over and over again, like the size of the bill that was just passed, rather than actually talking about what it does or talking about it as if it adds to the deficit, when it doesn't. And, you know, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, for example, was never talked about in that way when it wasn't paid for at all. And so I'm wondering how you go about trying to get outside of that bubble, sort of question some of that, mainstream you know, those ideas just sort of are sticky, but not actually correct. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. And I think we actually saw some of that come up as it related to what we saw in Virginia in those elections, right? I think there's, because I think what you're talking about, Ehrman, it's a good point, is like the conventional wisdom that kind of gets out there and then, as you say, gets kind of sticky. So I think there are like three things that I do that I think are helpful on that front. And I will talk about those three things. Number one is having a very good team. And I have a very good team on MSNBC, right? There, it's led by this executive producer who's very, just very smart and sees through the BS. How are we doing on like Clubhouse? Can I say like bad words on Clubhouse?
We used to. Where are we with that?
Like bullshit's not a bad word, right? But like, I wouldn't say it on TV, but like, you know, who can kind of cut through the bullshit. I have super smart producers that are like constantly reading and looking at this stuff and putting those questions to me and to the rest of our team and to like our internal, you know, internal political unit here at NBC News. So I think that's a huge thing, right? Cause I couldn't, it's just helpful to have other people to like check the BS, right? Or like gut check all the time or be like, wait, to stop and ask those questions that you're talking about. Like, wait, is this really true? Like, wait a second, but I read this or whatever the case may be, right? So number one, it's a good team. Number two, it's what I have found is helpful is what I call white space in my day. Like I said, it's, you know, 9 p.m. Eastern time right now. And I'm like still sitting in my office after having got here earlier this morning, like fine, but like building in. So I say this to say my schedule is nuts, but what's important is to try to build in like what I call sort of white space moments where I can just like, how do you know that something's not true? You have to like learn about it, right? You have to like talk to people about it. You have to pick up the phone and call your sources about it and see what they're saying and see what smart people, you know, around you are talking about here. And like, you need to build in time and energy to do that. And then number three is like talking to human beings who are not in the world of politics, who don't live in DC or New York. The biggest thing when I came home from the campaign trail in 2016, and I was asked this a bunch in 2017, is I was like, you know, being asked, we're very fortunate to be asked to talk to different events or whatever. It was like, what was something that surprised you about like being on the road? And the answer that I always gave, because I think it's true, like the bubble is real, right? Like the Acela corridor bubble is real. It totally exists. It's like actually a thing. I think we all know that, like, but it just was a very vivid example for me having not lived in DC or New York for 2 years. And then effectively, right? Like my address was there, but I wasn't there. And then coming back and being like, oh, wow, this is a bubble, right? And so for me, especially since I've been able to have, you know, the opportunity to be in the senior Washington correspondent role, talking to people who don't live in these sort of cities who, which by the way, that's not to say like, it's not the trope of like, you know, that you've seen the like, the Trump diner, you know, the Trump safari kind of like stereotypical print piece, right? Like it's not that, but it's talking to people who live in, like I just interviewed a family in Denver, right? Who, you know, about something totally different topic. But like, yet, you know, politics kind of always comes up or like is threaded through the conversation. And just like talking to people who are outside of the bubble, I think really, really helps. And traveling, like it's been hard in the pandemic because we've had, obviously, I'm you know, fully vaxxed up now. But during the pandemic, you know, we had a lot of restrictions on travel, even just internally at NBC, because they wanted to make sure people stayed safe. But I think as we start to be able to travel more, that's so important to do. And to not go to like the cliche places, right? Like, there's a lot of America out there and like all of America should be represented on cable news. So those would be the three things that I would say are I think helpful for me as I think about your answer.
Thank you very much, Aaron. I can't, the vivid imagery of a Trump safari of just hitting all the diners in the Rust Belt is so evocative and awesome. I love that. So we're going to go to two more questions and then we're going to wrap it up. We're going to go to Erica and then Nina.
Hey, Hallie and the moderators. Thanks so much for your time. Welcome to Clubhouse.
Thank you.
I'm fangirling a bit. I'm really appreciative of this opportunity. I'm also the mom of young kids, although mine are a bit older than yours. So congrats on momming.
Back at you. Same to you, man.
Not
and with
easy.
Older kids, man, you had it. Yep. Anyway.
Yeah, my younger two just got vaccinated today. And my older one is on quarantine. And when he gets out, he will get vaccinated. I am a physician at a VA hospital. And so I'm going to make this a little bit sort of politics and media adjacent. We in the VA work really hard, and I'm really prideful in the work that I do. I'm an internal medicine physician, and I do primary care. And I actually work for a really special program within the VA that does home visits for veterans. And as we're approaching Veterans Day, I'm sure you may be thinking about some Veterans Day pieces. But I would say that within the media, the VA isn't always portrayed in the best light. And the problems within the VA get a lot more attention than the good things that the VA offers to our veterans. And the spotlight is not often shown on the people, the programs, and the services that the VA offers that are really, really great. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts about that, and if in your new role that is much more broad and not just focused on politics, if you might consider highlighting some of the things within the VA that we do that's really special as the largest single-payer healthcare system in our country.
First of all, Erica, thank you for that question. And thank you.
AirPod just fell out. Wait. I'm so sorry, these AirPods.
Erica, thank you for your question. Thank you so much for what you do. I know that it can't always be easy, and it sounds like you're doing some work that you're really proud of. And that is so commendable. And I'm just thrilled to hear that. So the answer is yes. Like, of course, absolutely. We would consider doing those stories. I think everybody, every media outlet that's not, you know, that has the space to do it should be considering doing those stories. I hear you. I think that the what you describe as sort of the problems in the VA, like, it is something that have, you know, you're right. Like, they've existed. They're very, you know, at times those problems are very real, right? And like, but I do think you're right. Like, members of the media can do a better job telling positive stories about government too. And so I take that feedback and I hear it. I think that's like super valid. VA is like a very critical agency. I talk to vets a lot in my job. Even I did this piece, a series on cannabis for the Today Show fairly recently, traveled to Hawaii, talked specifically with veterans as it relates to access to medical cannabis, which is really hard to do right now. And it's not even necessarily it's actually not the VA's fault. It's Congress for not passing laws to allow the VA to make it easier to study and to get access for vets to cannabis, which some of them found and do find to be very helpful treatment. So I think there's a lot of nuanced stories to be told as it relates to veterans, as it relates to the VA. And so I think that's a really great and important point, and I appreciate you for bringing it up.
Thank you very much, Erica. My dad was also a Vietnam veteran who received a ton of care at the DC VA. So thank you for your work. We want to go to Nina for our last
question. Thank you. And I feel like we should leave the vets as the last question since we're rounding Veterans Day this week. But Holly, thank you so much for coming here. And we really hope that you'll come back to Clubhouse as your show takes off and, you know, come meet with the community and talk about some of the things you're seeing, especially as you're in the field. My question for you is, and you might not have even seen this yet, but as we've been in this room, some news broke that Brian Williams is leaving NBC. And I wonder if you've been a national correspondent and someone who's had the opportunity to get out of the newsroom and see the world and see the country, more particularly places where the country's culture has really emerged strongly. and I'm curious if you think that network and cable news has sort of what you've learned over the past couple of years covering, especially the last election cycle going into midterms. You know, news organizations, I think, have really been through a lot in the past couple of years between covering the pandemic and the intensity of the political cycle. But, you know, what thoughts do you have as you're building this new, you know, you're building a new platform for news there, right? Streaming news. Nobody's done that before. And you have an opportunity to do something new with what you've learned from being out on the road these past 5 years and really, you know, in and around the country. What are some of the things you think that the audience wants that they're not getting that you know, you'd like to try to serve up?
It's a great question, and thank you for that, Nina. I think, you know, I am immediately struck as an answer to your question being, I think the thing that I've seen as I've traveled the country and as I've looked at people's consumption habits, and I'm kind of obsessed with, like, people that I meet, like what news they watch and where they get their news from. People are looking and listening to so many different things, right? Like, whether you are on one side of the political spectrum and, like, maybe you're watching more Fox, you're not just watching Fox, you're watching a whole and I don't mean to overgeneralize, but just anecdotally, you're watching a slew of other things sort of in that sphere. If you're on a different end of the political spectrum, maybe you're watching MSNBC primetime, but you're also getting your news from a ton of different ways. You know, I will tell you The Daily comes up a lot. I will tell you that I hear Axios a fair amount, the newsletters that are out there, like people, podcasts, like everybody's listening to a podcast. You guys are on Clubhouse. You obviously appreciate the audio space. There are so many different ways that people are accessing information. And so listen, it's not like it doesn't take a mathematician to look at the numbers and see that audiences for traditional network newscasts are getting smaller over the years, right? The cable space is sort of is what the cable space is. And as more and more people get access to streaming, right, which for some folks is just easier to get, many people, there are a lot of viewers and audience members and consumers that are making the choice to go to streaming. So I think when I, you know, it's sort of a great business question. I am interested in the business aspect of my profession as a sort of just a curious person. I like to know more about that. And the way that I think about it is this, you know, the majority of our, this is something about streaming here. The majority of people who are watching our streaming channel right now are watching it on TV, right? They're not pulling it up on their phones or on their mobile devices. And they are choosing to watch our streaming network instead of, for example, a different cable network. They are actively making that choice. So we need to be there to find people, to meet people where they are and at ways that are accessible to them. Like whether it's on your Roku or your Apple TV or like on, you know, YouTube, if you're just on your desktop, whatever it is, laptop, like we need to be there for people to access them. So it's been, you know, all of that said, like, I think people in the political world sometimes, or at least like folks maybe in political media, undercount the importance of like Nightly and Today, right? And I say that meaning the network morning and evening broadcasts. Yes, their audiences are smaller than they used to be, but they're still freaking huge. There's still a massive audience who's watching, you know, Savannah and Hoda on the Today Show in the morning and Lester at Nightly at night. And that's really important because there is still kind of a cultural touchstone there, or even if it's, you know, whatever, other networks or whatever the case may be. And so I think that's also something that I try not to lose sight of. Like there are still people who are watching those network broadcasts. And so being, you know, responsible in our storytelling there is just as critical as it is on cable. And then I guess the only other point that I would make is as you talk about spaces to access news, it's these spaces that we're talking about, right? Streaming, cable, network. But there's also so much on social media, right? Like we're all doing stuff on Twitter or Instagram or TikTok or like here, Clubhouse, whatever the case may be. And I've just personally had a really sort of tough relationship with Twitter over the years. Like I really loved it. I was really active on it. I really hated it. It's also just, you know, we always say that Twitter's not real life. First Read, our political unit, just put out, I think, some really smart polling on this about just, you know, the number of people who actually are on Twitter or are on some of these social media platforms. And I think there can be a bit of an echo chamber effect on some of those as it relates to people who are in the political media. And so that's just one thing that I kind of try to be conscious of as I'm thinking about, you know, having a wide variety of news sources that I consume and that I'm also sort of where I'm putting out the reporting that I'm doing for other people to consume. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question. Thanks, Nina.
So, Hallie, before I thank you for coming on and being so liberal with your time and going really in-depth and personal with us, I just wanted to ask you, what do you want to leave us with as Americans, as political news, as news consumers? It can be positive, it could be negative, or it could be somewhere.
Yeah, what a good question. I would say this, like, keep consuming and keep being smart about what you consume. I think that you know, we have, like I'm saying, as news consumers, you know, and I talk about this in classes and in different things that I do, like we have a responsibility to like curate our own news sources in ways that feel responsible to us, right? So I guess I would just kind of leave folks with that. Like, you know, I would love for you all to like to watch streaming and MS and cable and like, you know, Nightly and Today Show and all that, like, because not because I'm an NBC homer and like want everybody to like love NBC as much as I do, but because like getting your news from a variety of news sources is the most important thing. I think most of us are probably already doing that, but I do think that's one thing that I would maybe just leave with is just like keep consuming a big variety of news sources, because that is just going to make us all sort of more responsible audience members, if that makes sense.
It does. And I just want to thank you very much for spending some time with Politics and Media.
I have enjoyed it immensely. Thank you so much for having me, honestly. And I really appreciate you, you and your super smart audience and their great questions. So thank you.
Awesome.
That is all we have for you today. Again, a huge thanks to Hallie for coming out, to our audience for their questions, and to you for being here. As always, if you like or dislike what you hear, if you want to find out how to join us live almost every day of the week, maybe ask one of our upcoming guests a question, or hear past episodes, please visit our website, pm101.live or pm101.club. They both work and will get you to the same place where you can find all that and more. This has been Politics and Media 101. I'm Jeff Browning. On behalf of Justin Higgins, our co-founder, and our team, Thank you very much for being here. We hope to see you and hear from you soon.